This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Communities and workplaces around the country are grappling with the legacy of deep-seated racism. Many institutions are challenging themselves to diversify and create equitable environments. Cream City Conservation and Consulting is helping make that happen. The Milwaukee company takes a two-pronged approach, consulting and training. They work with environmental and community service organizations to address workplace culture and practices. They also train and employ young people from underrepresented communities. Cream City Conservation was founded by Milwaukee native August Ball. She met, socially distanced, with WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz to talk about her work and the challenges that lie ahead.
What I've come to learn is that we can't begin the conversation around unconscious bias, because we don't actually have a collective understanding of how that unconscious bias is leaning towards white supremacy culture, right? So we have to understand why our biases lean the way they do, typically. And we see that regardless of ethnicity and race, the general populace does tend to lean having a more favoring bias towards whiteness and a more negative bias towards blackness. This is across the board, which is surprising, right? Because you would think people of color, right, especially people who are black, who identify as black, would not lean that way, but they do. And this is because of the continual messaging and normalization there is around anti-blackness. What I will also, so beyond just establishing some shared language, I think it's also important for people to come to the table with the understanding that while on one hand we, you know, being a good person, quote unquote, is a verb, like it's something you have to do every day, right, to maintain it. It's not like I'm a good person, done. At the same time, we also need folks to come to the table understanding that their level of racial literacy, wherever it may be, has nothing to do with their character. It has nothing to do with their intelligence or their cognitive ability. It has everything to do with our socialization. And so if we can get past this notion of, oh my gosh, I just realized I made a mistake, or worse yet, you're telling me I made a mistake and I'm not ready to accept that yet, or you're making me question all of the things I've held true for so long. If we can get past like the blame game and actually talk about, here's just the situation from a reality standpoint. Are you with us in changing this? Do you want to be a part of that change? It's not, it may seem fun and like rah, rah, we're going to get the whole gang together. But the truth is, like, this work is painful. It's emotionally laborious no matter what side of the tracks you sit on. And it doesn't have an end point. That's the other tough part, right? I wish I could say, yep, you do steps 1 through 10, and then you get to check out, go home, and have popcorn. That's not, this is everlasting. It's deciding, am I going to wake up every day deciding I'm going to be an anti-racist? And that doesn't mean you're going to do it perfectly every day. In fact, like, no one does it perfectly every day, right? But being able to measure, here's where I'm starting from, here's my desired future state of a world I want to live in, of a community I want to reside in, of an institution I want to work for, or a business I want to run, right? We have to get on the same page with that. But right now, I think we're still debating whether or not we even have a problem. You know, we still have folks with a lot of power who, even right as we are speaking, are making it intentionally difficult to even get information out to folks, right? Like, our current administration is essentially saying, is blocking information, saying you can't use these terms, like critical race theory, like white privilege, calling it un-American. That's really concerning. So information absolutely is key, because I will say our American institution of education has intentionally failed all of us It's very much so possible to have a PhD in history and never know about the Tulsa, Oklahoma Black Wall Street. It's very much so possible to have a degree in sociology and never learn about the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, right? So we cannot rely on the systems that got us here to get us out. So we have to create a movement around this, right? So to another extent, when I first would see folks getting on the highway and blocking off traffic, I remember thinking, I agree with the cause, but like, I just don't agree with that. That seems too, like, that's extensive. That seems very like unnecessary and unhelpful. What I've actually learned about movement building now is that those tactics are actually very effective in forcing people to choose what side of an issue they're going to be on. And I think for too long, the American public has been allowed to sit on the fence. We've been allowed to be just anonymous with this work. And now employees, community members, we're calling every institution, every pocket of power to the table and asking them, where do you stand on this? And a lot of these entities are not ready to answer that question. So I hope that more and more entities get ready to answer the question, and I hope their answer is right. I hope they will be on the right side of history, but that's up to them. Well, my intent behind asking that question is to help us all interrogate what we have held as truth. And the reason why I ask people to share that is because, one, it creates a space where we're, for the most part, experiencing something similar, right? We're like, yeah, that's exactly what my parents taught me, that as far as what it takes to get ahead. Work really hard, get a good job, do what you're supposed to do, right? Whatever that is. And not that I want to, you know, harm anyone's view of their great-great-grandparents, you know, and it doesn't mean that that folks didn't work hard to get where they are, right? It just means that maybe some of our perspectives were formed by incomplete information. Again, to no fault of our own, but we perhaps have developed a very strong opinion around a topic that we actually don't have all the information about. I personally dedicate about 3 to 4 hours a week just to my own education. The average American probably, one, doesn't have time to do that, doesn't have the will, for whatever reason, right? And I'm still learning things as I go on, right? When we do ask that, when we ask it the second time after setting the stage and providing some context, again, that's the context I provide in my workshop. We would need 3 weeks minimum even to cover, you know, one century. But what I find is that for folks who are ready and who are willing, they respond, I think, in a way that acknowledges that people experience this world differently based on the color of their skin. And then for others, their response is, well, it takes money to get ahead in America. Like they can't bring themselves to say, who has had access to money, and who has had access to land, and who has had access to you know, to wealth building generationally. They can't quite yet bring themselves to that. And I don't pretend to, I'm not going to claim I know why they're at that place. It could be different reasons for each person. I will say, though, I think that we still have a ways to go with people even getting comfortable and de-tabooing having conversations about race. Because if we cannot have conversations about race, how are we ever going to dismantle racism? Thank you. if we keep in mind that the Fair Housing Act was not in place until 1968, this means that my father, in his early 20s, was not able to purchase property wherever he wanted to. He was relegated to specific areas, and this is due to not only redlining, but also to racially restrictive covenants. And I want to mention historian Reggie Jackson, who actually gave me the gift of this information, but it created some conversation with my own father around this issue. What he did to get around this at the time was to have my white mother be the purchaser of certain properties. My parents are in real estate. So I share my own family story, again, for the same reason that facts don't always change behavior. I think data is one thing, but I think most of us humans respond to human stories. And I hope that people will hear my family story, and perhaps it will inspire them to question their family stories and to dig a bit deeper themselves. To be a co-conspirator means you're willing to put something on the line, whether that's financial, power. Right now, we are in a state where the average white American is not even willing to have an uncomfortable dinner conversation, let alone put power and money behind an issue, right? So that's something to think about. When we think of allyship, an ally is someone who they're doing the work in terms of educating themselves. They recognize that there is there's opportunity to bring folks in and to have them join the table. They're not quite yet ready to relinquish control of that table. They still want to be centered in the work rather than asking continuously, how can I decenter myself as the person holding power in this space? I think that's the other aspect too. If we are not asking ourselves, what positions of power do I hold? I don't care if you are a stay-at-home mom. Simply being able-bodied allows us positions of power, right? So continuously asking, what positions of power do I hold? What circles of influence do I have access to? And how can I maneuver in those spaces that will create equity? So yeah, what are you willing to put on the line? Are you willing to challenge a policy in your organization that is inequitable? Are you willing to respond to a comment by someone who's in a superior role than you? Are you willing to walk away from a job that is doing things that are hindering racial equity? Again, and that's not for me to answer, but at the very least, like, are you willing to be uncomfortable? And honestly, in honor of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she was asked, you know, when something to the effect of when will the Supreme Court be, you know, equitable? And I believe she said when there are 9 women on the bench. And when they scoffed at that, she said, well, what? There's been 9 men on the bench forever, right? So why would this be different? So the same thing to me applies to companies and organizations. If your organization is over, you know, 70-80% white, to fail to say for every next position we hire, it's going to be a person of color. If you cannot say that, then to me what you are saying is, I don't believe that there are any qualified people of color to fill these positions. Because why would you not, right? Because if your fear is, we want to make sure the person's qualified, well, that should go without saying. And if you already have an overrepresentation of a particular identity group, why would you not stand behind then saying, we can find an accountant of color, we can find a marketer of color, we can find a land steward of color, and actually, you know, move through that. Ideally, we get to a point where our organizations are doing this work so intrinsically that you are organically attracting a diverse talent pool, right? That you are organically retaining that talent, and that everyone feels that they can thrive, has a voice and equal opportunity regardless of their identities. Ideally, that's the end goal, right, for that. But until then, you know, until then, we have to stack the deck, because the deck is already stacked against people of color. It has been. And I don't say this to have a, oh, woe is us thing. It just is what it is. The numbers don't lie. In every single corner and facet of society, race is the key determining factor of thriving. And not to the advantage of people of color. Right? So to me, I would love to see organizations commit to that and stand behind that. I just don't know if they're ready to do that, if they have the wherewithal to acknowledge that is a step that they would need to take. You know, my colleague, Dr. Monique Liston, has said recently that it's not as if enslaved Africans were sitting around thinking, what kind of workshop can we put the slave owners through so that they'll stop oppressing us, right? So I say that because the reality is never in our history has power been relinquished willingly. I am hoping and praying that this is the time, because I, like many of us Americans, I desire for this movement to be peaceful. However, the lived experiences of people of color are not peaceful. There is continuous violence, verbal violence, physical violence, violence against families. Women right now in internment facilities are being robbed of their ability to bear children without their consent. This is the country, the world we're living in. So in terms of just my hypothesis of if we're ready, if this is going to be the turning point, I don't know. But I think this will be the last generation that tolerates it one way or another.
August Ball is the founder of Cream City Conservation Corps and Consulting. She spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter, Susan Bentz.